When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Blue Kool-Aid drinkers, Big Z here. The Blue Kool-Aid drinkers are back this week, and we're going to be discussing a little bit about the current situation with the NFL and COVID. It says there's a training camp supposedly coming up, but there's an opt-out deadline, things of that nature. We're going to get into that for a little bit, and then to the crux of the episode is talking about our boy, Matt Stafford. Talking about a little bit of the beginning of his career as a whole, how the media portrays him, top three plays and games that he's been in. So it's all Matt Stafford. If you're a believer, great. Listen in. If not, we'll try to convince you otherwise. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Drinking Blue Kool-Aid. Please subscribe to the podcast. And now, sit back, relax. It's time. This is Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid, a Detroit Lions podcast made by lifelong Lions fans, UJ.
I've been really drinking a lot of Kool-Aid tonight. Special brand of Kool-Aid called Weller.
Bob.
It's hard to find the losses here. Stafford, regular season MVP.
Rud Dog.
We're going to just be that team that just can flow like water and adapt to any team. The new dynasty is born.
And Connor.
Got to be Stafford. Now with the two tight end sets that I'm so excited about, I see it all clicking.
And I'm your host, Big Z. The media knows nothing. Forward down the field. One pride. Get your Kool-Aid. It's time for the pod.
With the first pick in the 2009 NFL Draft, the Detroit Lions select Matthew Stafford, quarterback, Georgia.
Blue Kool-Aid drinkers, we are back. It's July 20th. I know we've been off for a couple weeks here, but there hasn't been too much football news until recent days, and the 4th of July holiday as well. But I'm Big Z, and joining us as always is Rud Dog.
Whoa.
UJ.
Hey.
Bob.
Hello.
And Connor.
Hi.
We got the whole crew here. We're going to be talking about, of course, Detroit Lions football. We're going to be talking about the current state of football right now, and then we're going to venture off and do something that we've been wanted to do for a while, which is talk about our guy Matt Stafford exclusively here. So I think we got a really fun episode coming up for the listeners here. And to get you ready, because believe it or not, I mean, the football season is technically supposed to start in less than 2 months, which is kind of crazy considering everything going on right now. And it doesn't seem very certain, but there's a few things recently as we record this today and news coming out just in a matter of hours ago. So first of all, it appears there's going to be no preseason games this year. So I would just want to go around and get the thoughts on that first. Is that everybody's giving a thumbs up on the video here.
The preseason is a waste of time and everyone just gets hurt anyways. So I'd be in favor of abolishing it permanently, in my opinion.
I wouldn't mind seeing two preseason games to max. I mean, you do have to give these rooks a chance to prove themselves, and that's the only chance they're going to get. So it's a little tough on those guys, but as far as the games themselves, no, I'm not going to miss preseason too much.
If I have to bring up somebody the point of contention on here maybe a little bit, but Zach Zenner, do you think he ever gets on an NFL roster if it wasn't for the preseason?
Good question.
That's just one example that popped in my mind, but you know, those are types of guys that make NFL rosters that might not without a preseason game.
It's those guys on the edge of the roster that it matters for, like the guys who are starters
it's almost a hindrance in a lot of ways for some of these guys. But,
yeah, maybe because the fans are reprieved, you know, from the doldrums of preseason games. But for the players, I think they're going to – a lot of them are going to miss it. And, you know, it gives us a chance, too, to get excited about certain young guys that we wouldn't normally get to see, you know. Like you said, like Zenner was a great example. He excited people in the preseason. And he said, hey, we might have something here. We aren't going to know until the season starts. And, you know, they're not going to be experimenting once the season starts. It's, they're going to play their best guys. So,
some rookies are going to NFL rookie camps this week, and then NFL training camp is really supposed to start next week. So with all that happening, the NFL is – it looks like they're coming to some agreements on some things. So first of all, if any player wants to opt out for the season, they have to do so by August 1st. So that might be a big date for a lot of NFL teams to see who is going to be playing and who is not. And they had this in baseball as well, where and they have it in NHL, I think, too, where anybody can opt out. But that means if you opt out, you cannot come back at any point in the season. You are done for that year. And they and then for the NFL, they have to do it by August 1st.
Hey, so does your contract push down the road? Like the Lions would still control them for another year if one of our guys did that? You know?
Yeah, so I was curious about what opting out meant. So this is what a player who opts out will have his contract toll for a full year. He will not receive his base salary or any other payment scheduled to be earned after the date of the opt-out, and he will not earn a benefit, credit, or an accrued season. In 2021, his contract will be reinstated. It's like a pause on the contract, almost, it seems. That's what I gather from looking at this.
That's only fair.
Yeah. I know there's been discussions about people reporting to camp, and if they report to camp and they get COVID or something like that, they will get a certain pay still. They won't get their full salary. It's a weird line. I think they're still working out some of those things. But as far as the opt-out, it sounds like a pause on their salary. But I'm not sure how that affects salary cap and everything like that. I think they have a lot of kinks to work out in that regard, too. It's a very unique situation, obviously. What's that, Rudd Dog?
Crazy times. This is wild. So many little things to work out right now.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently, I was listening to a podcast with an NFL expert. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He's a Jim Laresso or something from the NFL Network. But either way, he was talking about it. You know, the way certain contracts are structured, and there could be cap hits next year, especially with some opt-out clauses where, you know, it could reduce NFL salary caps by $20 to $30 million. So they're going to need probably some amnesty clauses or something in some of these contracts to not have that happen. But
has anybody indicated that they're going to do that yet? I know J.J. Watt was talking about it. I don't know if he's going to – he's one guy I heard talking about it. I don't know if anybody else did.
I haven't heard anything concrete, especially now.
I haven't heard anything either. All we know is, like, Matt Stafford's out working with his boys.
That's right.
That's all that matters to us right now. And I know Tom Brady was out working when he wasn't supposed to in Florida there. Those are the only two that I'm
aware of. Oh, yeah, in the park. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Real men. Manly men.
Yes.
And then as far – so the players have up to so basically, when they report to training camp, they'll be tested daily. You're not allowed to enter the facilities until you test negative for the virus. It'll be daily testing for the first 2 weeks of training camp. And then after that, if there is a less than 5% positive test rate, then it'll be every other day they get tested. And this is what's consistent with, it seems like, every other sport.
I just want to say, some of those guys, you know, weren't too good at tests in school. So it could affect a large portion of the NFL.
I didn't go to college for too long.
Just ask Cordell Jones. He didn't go to school to play school. He went there to play football.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
Sorry about that.
There's one more interesting thing I wanted to bring up about this and the virus and kind of on the trickle-down effect or the trickle-up effect in this case in terms of college football. There's a lot of talk that it's not going to be played in the fall. It'll be played in the spring. And if they play college football in the spring, how would that affect the NFL draft and everything like that? It's a very interesting conversation. Like, are these guys going to play a whole year of football? Like, if NFL starts in September next year, really? Are they going to play
some of those guys aren't even going to play. Some of the top guys who know they're going to get drafted, they won't even play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or they'll play up like until week five and say I had a good game and then I'll step out.
Yeah, right.
Like that's probably it. Yeah. But all the non-NFL guys, I assume, would be playing per usual. Yeah. Or if you're not going to get drafted that year.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And there's people that come from high school that start like in spring ball and then they get ready for next year. So or people from high school, if they actually play their season, they can be ready to play for the spring season of college football this year. So I don't know. It's a wild trickle up effect. But then if it goes into spring, like I'm curious how that would be for the draft and everything like that.
Be cool to have football in spring.
Yeah, I mean, NFL guys and coaches probably love it because they could watch these guys live rather than just like watch their tape.
It'll mess with our way too early mock drafts, you know, when we're.
It would mess with that.
Our way too late mock drafts.
Well,
oh yeah,
amazing.
But I think we will have more to say on that once things become clear and people start reporting and. I'm sure August 1st, if there's some major opt-out, we will have an emergency podcast or something like that. I don't know what to expect with that, to be honest with you. Like, I'm curious how that works with a guy like, say, Taylor Decker says he wants to opt out, and he's in the last year of his contract. It's a rookie contract. I just don't know how that all plays out in situations like that. But UJ's messed around with our video over there.
It's too much fun, though.
But, gentlemen, unless you guys have anything to add to that, I think we should move on to our focus of this episode. And that is, of course, our boy, the living legend of Matt Stafford.
Yeah.
I think it's time. Let's do it.
Legend.
So, you guys all heard of this guy, Matt Stafford, NFL quarterback for the Detroit Lions, right?
Yeah, there he was bitten by a radioactive goat. Gave him powers.
Ooh.
A goat?
It's a
goat. Then we can make a Marvel movie out of it.
Big fish. Yeah. Why not?
Now we're talking.
Jack is bored.
Well, just to give a little background on him in case, he was born in Tampa, but he grew up in Dallas. And did you know that he went to Highland Park High School? And did you know that he attended high school with Clayton Kershaw and played baseball with him?
What?
Oh, that can't be true.
Oh,
that's news.
That's crazy.
That is brand new information.
Right there.
That's never been covered before. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
I would say he had a fairly successful career at Georgia. Obviously successful enough to become the Lions' number one draft pick in 2009. Number one overall pick. Getting $70 million guaranteed dollars before he threw an NFL pass is pretty wild as well. That would not happen. Imagine where the Lions probably would have been if they didn't have to pay that contract right away to him. Now one of the major benefits of drafting a quarterback of that caliber is that you get him on a cheap contract and you can build up the rest of the roster with that money before you have to pay the quarterback. But like the Ravens are doing with Lamar Jackson right now, he's on his rookie contract and you're able to build up the entire roster with talent.
I think he was the second to the last contract like that, right? Sam Bradford came a year after him, if I'm not mistaken, and he had the last big rookie contract before they had the rookie cap, if I'm not.
Yep, exactly. So. Yeah, and just a little recap. So Stafford, his first year, went 2-8. Then he got hurt. Got hurt again his second year. People calling Glassford for a little bit there. Two freak injuries with the shoulder. But then after that, you know, Iron Man. So 2-8 his first year, 1-2 his second year, then 10-6. Then 2011, 4-12, 7-9, so on and so forth. But 11-5. So I mean, he's led the Lions at 3 different playoff seasons. UJ and Bob, I really want to get your opinions on this, especially just because you've been watching Lions football a little longer than Connor Rudd Dog and I. So you, at least what you've seen in your time, Stafford is the best quarterback you've watched.
Yeah, ever since they took the leather helmets off, I remember the first game I went to. And I am younger than the Bobby Lane era, but I remember Greg Landry, Gary Danielson, Eric Kramer, Scott Mitchell, all the greats, and Joey Blue Skies, who somebody mentioned off the air. But no, Stafford by far in my lifetime is the best quarterback. And so I would put him above Bobby Lane just because he's awesome. So What about you, UJ?
Yeah, Stafford's one of the main reasons I watch the Lions these days, and has been for the last 10 years. He's the most exciting player on that team. His arm is unbelievable. The things he does with the passing game is unreal. I don't think he gets near enough credit. Yeah, he's definitely the biggest reason to tune into the Lions in the last 10 years. Hopefully we got enough team around him now. He can take it to the next level. But, yeah, Stafford's a great quarterback, underrated by almost all the media. Not here, though.
Scott Mitchell's the one that got our only playoff victory, right, in the Barry Sanders era?
That was Eric Kramer. Eric Kramer.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, is he the greatest Lions quarterback because he won the only only playoff game in the Super Bowl era?
Nope.
No. He was pretty good, though, actually. We probably should have kept him a little longer. But
he had a decent play defense, maybe he'd have a playoff win against New Orleans.
Yeah, and I'll be bringing that game up later specifically, Connor. Let's get on to the next part here. And we've mentioned it a lot, the media and the coverage of the Lions, but specifically Matt Stafford. I was curious what your guys' thoughts were on this. So ESPN recently released a poll of all their analysts, and, you know, it's ESPN, it's a poll, whatever, but just using this as a talking point and kind of how people feel about Stafford as a whole. But here was their top 10 quarterbacks: Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, Drew Brees, Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, and then number 10, Matt Stafford. What are our thoughts on that? Is that a fair ranking for Matt Stafford, 10th overall in the league, behind the likes of Wentz and Prescott at 8-9?
Well, if you're looking at him as a whole, then I might agree. You know, as a whole, I disagree. You know, but as a quarterback, I think he's more top five. There's about five guys ahead of him. Maybe.
Wait, did you say as a whole you agree and as a whole you disagree?
I double spoke.
So what do you really?
As a whole, I disagree. I don't know. The joke's dead. no, I think it's a terrible rate. I don't think there's 10 better quarterbacks, or 9 for that matter. I think Carson Wentz, no way. Dak Prescott, for damn sure not.
No way.
I mean, not. I don't even think Brady at this stage of his career is better than Stafford.
He's not even better than Mitch at this stage of his career.
But no, I think he's top five easy, especially if you factor into quality of teams around him. I think you can easily make an argument for top five, and anything less is just people not giving him his due.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at this list. Mahomes, I mean, everybody on here has won a playoff game except for, I believe, Carson Wentz is the only one that hasn't. That's just because he was injured. So do you think – I mean, that's got to be a factor in some of these rankings.
Yeah, right? I think so.
The playoff success?
I mean, Brady, I mean, yeah, speaks for himself. Mahomes, yeah. Russell Wilson.
I mean, Mahomes and I would agree Mahomes and Wilson being up there. I think those are two really good quarterbacks. How about Aaron Rodgers? Do we think Aaron Rodgers should be ahead of Matt Stafford at this rate?
He's got the resume, kind of makes some arguments, but for that matter, I don't think Lamar Jackson is better than Stafford just because he can run a lot. Like,
he did have a really good year last year.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Stafford's a better quarterback.
Have you guys ever heard of Stafford being compared to Dan Marino in terms of a guy that puts up ridiculous stats?
I've heard that.
No, never gets the big one.
I have heard.
Is that a fair comparison?
I heard it and dismissed it immediately.
Well, I guess it's a fair comparison. I mean, Marino was a great passer, had an unbelievable arm, big stats, a lot of touchdowns. He never could win the big game either. So I guess it's a fair comparison.
I mean, Stafford has 41,000 yards in his career and now 256 touchdowns already in his career. He's on pace to break all these records just because he had 13 and 2,200 after. Well, the big one is in his third year in the league, he had 5,038 yards passing and 41 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That definitely boosted him right away into the stratosphere in terms of the top young quarterbacks and just in terms of on the projection to beat all these records. just because he's been doing it for so long. But in those 2 years, 2011-2012, he threw 663 pass attempts and then 727. Compare that to in 2018 when he threw 555 pass attempts. So under Scott Linehan, it was all shotgun all the time. It was kind of fun to watch. Yeah.
That was a fun offense.
Yeah. But one of the things I think is underrated is just what, you know, we talk about Calvin Johnson, how great his career was, but Calvin Johnson might not have the career he had without Matt Stafford at quarterback.
Yeah, because there was a lot of haters were saying that Calvin was making Stafford, you know, like people who hated Stafford. And then you could argue that Stafford had his best year last year. I mean, up this first half of the year, whatever, until he got hurt. Without Calvin, I think he's an excellent quarterback, no matter.
So, Bob, you're saying Calvin was holding back Stafford?
No.
You can make it for that.
But I do think he did kind of rely on him a little much because you got Calvin. You're going to throw the ball up to Calvin.
Yeah, exactly.
So it made him a better quarterback probably not to have him. I mean, you need talented receivers, but when you have one guy standing out like that, it might have
not yeah, his game he down. Had with him most of the time. It was only Calvin.
Yeah, exactly. There's a play in specific that, I mean, Calvin should be thankful for. He had Stafford, I believe, is the Cincinnati Bengals. Stafford's like rolling over to the middle of the field. He's about to get hit and just throws like a 60-yard bomb. Now Calvin's covered with three people, but I'm saying no other quarterback's gonna get it 60 yards down the field, like a sidearm while getting hit, other than Stafford. So
yeah. I mean,
Stafford gave Calvin Johnson opportunities. A lot of other quarterbacks in the league never would have been even able to come close to. Like Jeff Driskel's not throwing at 60 yards like that on the run.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's a – or even Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not going to do that.
Yeah, from pure talent standpoint, I think there's no argument. I mean, that Stafford's one of the greats in the game right now. And, Connor, you remember this. When Stafford was a rookie, you remember Killer Kowalski, Tom?
Yeah.
Killer, the beat writer.
11:30.
He was great. But I remember when they drafted him, because there was some controversy whether they should draft him or not, Killer was saying, like, you got to see this guy up close and throwing, and it's amazing. And Connor and I went to that camp that year when he was a rookie, and just watching the ball come out of his hands is like, Jesus Christ, this is different, you know, than what we've seen before with the Lions. And just I think it's borne out through his career. But he's special. So, go ahead.
No, yeah. I think most people that get to watch him up close like that say the same thing. I think it was last year, didn't they play with the Texans at practice week there? Was it with the Texans, I think, last year?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. I think the coaches were saying they were just marveling at the ball coming out of his hands. They said it was unbelievable. I mean, even professional coaches have seen it all, you know, that they still marvel at the guy's arm. His arm is amazing.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, look at the throw against the Chiefs last year, that one touchdown up the middle to Galladay. Threw, like, the tiniest little, like, a sniper bullet pretty much could
you
fit through.
You think that'll
the
make our best throws here?
I don't know. I'll wait till the end of the episode to find out.
Stafford throw the day or whatever.
Yeah, I thought we were doing that today.
Is he going to be our cornerback of the week?
I said end of the episode. I said, wait, I'm keeping the listeners, you know, intrigued to the end here.
Gotcha.
That's what a host does. They keep him.
He used to watch Bobby Lane play, you know, so he doesn't hear too good no more.
I was out drinking with Bobby Lane. And, you know.
Oh, man. So
Lions win.
I know we were just talking about Calvin Johnson and, you know, some of his supporting cast, but I want to talk about Stafford and his. So is this current offensive roster that the Lions have the best supporting cast Stafford is going to have in his career?
If the running backs work out, it could be that way.
Yeah.
But hard to know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the best. Let's start at offensive line. Is this the best offensive line he's going to have? Because I would say in his time here, he hasn't really had an elite offensive line.
It's hard to think of a year
means.
With a really memorable one.
Best year was with Rob Sims, Backus, Raiola.
Yeah, like in the earlier
Warford and Reef, I think it was. Or no, it wasn't Reef. It was
Got
Perilous, maybe. But that year, when they finally put a decent guard between Backus and Raiola, and the line really gelled well for Stafford that year. But besides that, I mean, it's been hit or miss.
I mean, who was Raiola ever an elite center, though.
He was underrated, I thought. Mm-hmm. He was a little undersized.
He was top notch at times when he actually had a good sporting cast.
They used to call him the midget. But he was good. I liked him. He was fiery, man. The guy was an intense player.
He was fiery for sure. I just don't know if he was ever a tier center like we can see of the likes of Travis Swanson that we have now.
He wasn't an elite athletic specimen like guys like that, but like he definitely played top notch at times. But
I think
I don't know. It's hard to say. There's still too many question marks of what we got going into this season.
No, I thought last year would have been like the top offensive line he had, and then
seemed like it was going to be good.
Yeah, and Rick Wagner didn't really pan out, unfortunately. Yeah. But I mean, this has been Bob Quinn's focus is the offensive line since literally his first big signing was an offensive lineman, or being first draft pick, offensive lineman. I think this upcoming year is the best offensive line he's going to have in the last 10 years, with the exception of maybe the Warford thing. I really like the makeup of this offensive line, but also.
I think it could be one of the most like solidly staffed lines where there's actually consistently good players at every position and depth. But I mean, there's too many question marks. We were looking at maybe two rookies starting with a guy at right tackle who's never been a starter for any significant period of time. So I mean, I like the talent, I like our depth, but I don't know what we have there yet. It's just too early to say. I mean, I like the potential, though.
Yeah. Let's go to the receivers now. Is this the best receiving core he's had from top to bottom? I know we mentioned they had Calvin Johnson and Nate Burleson at one point, but I'm talking top to bottom, and this includes a tight end, the receiving part of the tight ends.
I mean, Hockenson should be our best receiving tight end in a while. Sorry, Ebron. And Galladay and Jones are amazing. Like, yeah, Calvin was great, but to have both those guys at once, and I think Amendola is, you know, pretty good. I mean, he's no Golden Tate.
I think he's very reliable.
Super reliable.
I'd say top to bottom, yes, but we definitely have had more talent at the very top in previous.
And we got the future.
Well, of course. We have Calvin Johnson.
And we got Plus, the Hall of Famer.
Titus Young was great for him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, we have, like, solid pros this year. Like, Titus Young had all the talent in the world. If that guy had his head right, that would have been quite a weapon to have going forward, but he flamed out. But now we have the Hall pass, but he's like a normal guy. We have other guys too. You know,
we did have the Herman Moore and Johnny Morton years. Those were pretty good.
Yeah, Brett Perriman.
Those guys are fantastic. And Perriman, yeah.
We can't forget the Calvin and Burleson years, though. I mean, what would the Tate crossover with those two? At all?
No.
I don't think so.
Did Tate play with Calvin?
Golden Tate was the signing after Calvin left.
Oh, you're right.
That was like their big signing.
There were 2 years there, Calvin and Burleson. Well, they both hit 1,000 yards, I think, 1 year. That was a pretty stellar combo. But
to answer your question, Z, I think this could be the best receiving lineup they've had. But it hasn't yet to be written.
Right.
Yeah, I would still like to see Jesse James come out a little more in terms of receiving, especially with that height.
I know, right? Why are they in the middle?
He was out there in those workouts this summer with Stafford. So let's hope it's going to yield some results.
Hey, if you add like DeAndre Swift in there too as a potential receiver, you know that could be a nice little wrinkle too.
Yeah, we still
absolutely
sure-handed Amendola too, who's contributing. So we got it.
Forget Quintez Cephas, bro, the future Hall of Famer we have on our roster.
I already said that joke, but I'll say it again: future Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Oh boy. So let's get to the final part of this. So two categories here. So I want to first get to this top three games in Stafford's career. That we all made a list of here. So I'll start off with my number three, at least, and I want to see if you guys have it. You know what? Can I throw in an honorable mention, or is that against the rules?
Why not? Speaking the rules.
You do whatever you want. It's our show.
So my all right, so because I was debating on number three for this, so my honorable mention was that playoff game, Connor, against the Saints.
Stafford to the end zone, and it will be caught by Johnson for the touchdown. Calvin Johnson gives Detroit the lead again.
So I thought it was his first like real spotlight game, like in the moment, and he comes out. He throws for 380 yards and three touchdowns in that game. Two interceptions, but you know, I don't remember those. And then Calvin Johnson in that game had 211 yards and two catches. Oh, we lost this game, by the way. We got killed 45-28, but it was a close game up until mid fourth quarter.
That looked like a very good game.
I think Connor was mentioning if we had any sort of semblance of a defense that year, talk about a killer team. But yeah, I mean, it was all offense that year. As I mentioned, he threw for 5,000 yards, 40 plus touchdowns, and nothing to show for ultimately in playoff victories that year. But that was my honorable mention. Did anybody else have that on their list by any chance?
Not me.
No.
No.
All right. So my actual number three then, this is, you know, the game didn't count for anything, but my God, it was so fun to watch and one of my favorite Stafford games. 520 yards, five touchdowns, two picks, and they lost 45-41 to the Green Bay Packers.
I was going
to
mention that one.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Matt Flynn out-dueled him.
Yeah. Matt Flynn in this game had 480 and six touchdowns and only one pick. But, man, Matt Stafford was so good in this game. He was just so good. And this is like in the freezing cold in a game that didn't really matter, but I mean he was just on fire that game. He can do no wrong, pretty much.
He got Flynn.
So that was my
Flynn
number
got
three.
Millions of dollars from that game, based on that game.
He never even started a game for Seattle after getting that big contract.
They call us the Career Makers. That's another nickname for the Detroit Lions.
So UJ and Bob, you guys had that on your list
that was
as well.
My number three.
That was. That actually was.
Awesome. So Connor and Rod Dog, what'd you guys say? Number
we
three
say it
then?
At the same time. Connor, go ahead.
You can go first if you want. I don't care.
No, go ahead.
All right, Connor, go.
I have my number three as the Lions Cowboys 2013 game.
The Detroit Lions. No timeouts left. Time is running. They're at the one, and Stafford says, "Come on in." Reaches over. Touchdown!
That wasn't really Stafford's best game, but I thought my single favorite Stafford moment when he does the QB sneak, screaming at Riley and guzz the end zone. I've just never seen anything like that before. I just think that's like such a clutch Gene moment. Yeah, I think he only had one touchdown, two interceptions that game, but I just thought that play was like not many QBs are going to do that. So that's why I'm throwing
it. No other QBs are going to do that.
Oh, yeah. And 488 yards, Connor, and 329 to Calvin Johnson. In
yeah,
game.
I know. He popped off. That
you never relied on Calvin.
That was my number two, Connor.
My number
two. I mean, on that list. Or on that last drive, he made some incredible throws that you wouldn't see anybody else in the league made. Just absolute bullets through like double coverage. I mean, everything we love about Stafford is on that last drive, and just incredible. So yeah, that was my number two. Rod Dog, you said that
was
your number two.
Yeah, that was my number two.
That was my number two.
It's such a legendary play. So
it is.
An improvised like sneak like that when you're supposed to spike it, like
No, that shows ultimate game awareness, ultimate living in the moment. It was just such a great signature moment for Stafford.
Oh hell yeah.
Very memorable.
But my number three, since we're kind of jumping ahead, was the Atlanta Falcons game in London when we came back.
Really?
Yeah, just I don't know. He had so many comebacks. I just picked one that was memorable. Like, cause I love all his, how many comebacks? Like 30 by now. But that game, I don't know. It was just so crazy. We managed to come back and win in a foreign country. Like, I don't know. It just was a cool game.
I mean, I don't really remember that game for Stafford as much personally as I just remember the Lions just getting like incredibly lucky at the end of the game.
Well, you know, that year.
Despite Caldwell's terrible coaching decision.
That year was the first year Caldwell was a coach.
and we had Terrell Austin as the defensive coordinator and Joe Lombardi as the freaking offensive coordinator. We might as well just had a wooden post, and that would have probably been an upgrade. But, I mean, Jim Bob Cooter was an upgrade, so, you know, that tells you all you need to know.
God rest his soul.
But, that season, our defense was top-notch, and our offense was Matt Stafford and, like, two skill players, and terrible offensive coordinating. And he had how many comeback victories in that year? And it was just amazing. But that one started it off like,
oh, yeah.
It was like one of the earliest ones. And that was just, I don't know. That one stuck with me a little bit.
So in that game, Rud Dog, Stafford had 325 yards, two touchdowns, and one pick. 151 of those to Golden Tate. He was targeted 15 times, caught it 7 times in that game. But definitely favored in that offense for sure. Do you guys remember how that game ended? Like, the Lions are in field goal position. There's like 15 seconds left on the clock. They have no timeouts, and they run the ball. Like what? What? Yeah. Like, first of all, before that, the Falcons, all they have to do is pretty much run out the clock. They decide to run a screen pass for some stupid reason with a minute left. The Lions have no timeouts, so all they have to do is run it and punt it, and the Lions get back with 10 seconds. Instead, they run a screen pass. With a minute left, they drop the screen pass, an incomplete pass. So the Lions get the ball with a minute left, enough time to get in field goal range. Then the Lions run that play with no timeouts, like clearly not enough time to set up a field goal. But then they get a delay of game penalty. No.
Still burning them up.
I'm getting my penalties mixed up. The Lions have a holding call. They have a holding call that the Falcons accept. So it brings them back 10 yards. Then Prater misses the field goal, but there's a delay of game, and so they get a 5-yard penalty, and then they kick a 48-yard field goal to win it. Just a bonkers and like a perfectly London-esque game, just like in the over across the pond there, just crazy shit happening. But and I also distinctly remember because it was a morning game, and they don't have a lot of those. We would have got.
I love those London games. I wish we had them more often.
The Lions were going to get one this year probably too. I was so bummed. They're supposed to play the Jaguars.
Yeah, maybe
over there.
They can audible it to next year's schedule.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I hope so. But yeah, so Rud Dog, as your number three, you said my number two is the Cowboys game. Your number two is the Cowboys game.
Yeah.
You, Jays. Bob, yours is number two, too, the Cowboys.
Yeah. How much do you want to bet?
Wait, Connor, what's your number two?
My number two is the Thanksgiving game against the Eagles.
Oh, that's a good one.
Calvin Johnson across from the rookie row. That's where Stafford goes.
Stafford went, hold on, I just had the stats up. 27 to 38, 337 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, 45-14 rout of the Eagles.
And Calvin had 3 in that game, right? Touchdowns?
Yeah, 137.8 passer rating. I don't remember any specific play of that game being jaw-dropping, but I just knew Stafford was just such a workhorse that game, and he just, like, took total control. And, like, it's a nationally televised game, too. Big moment. Like,
oh, yeah.
I wanted to keep it to wins for the most part on here. So I put that as my number two game for Stafford.
Oh, yeah. He just lights out that game. I know he had some nice back shoulder throws to Calvin in the end zone in that game specifically.
Yeah. That's one of their classic matchups together.
And it's always nice to kill the Eagles. Nobody likes Eagles fans.
It's
going to
be even nicer now with Slay playing for him.
Did you think if they don't reverse that call on Pettigrew that Dallas game might have made our list? But
it might have.
It's still noon, Bob.
Oh, they win that playoff game. That for sure makes that list.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know if that game was a Stafford game though, Bob. That was I remember Reggie Bush playing actually really good in that game.
You don't want a playoff game if it's a Stafford game.
Reggie Bush game
because they. They it's fair them enough. All the quarterbacks. It's all about the quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's exactly. True. That's why, like you were talking about at the beginning about is where he is on the list is because of playoff wins or whatever. So
right.
Hey, anyway.
Oh yeah.
How much you want to bet the number one game? We all have the same game.
I'm gonna bet very high.
And I think everyone out there listening will probably know the game too.
Is it the game where he broke the 18-game losing streak against the Redskins?
No.
Oh. It was a second win that year, I think, right? The second win. The Lions only had two wins that year.
They won against a Notre Dame quarterback that day.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a great game, actually.
Yeah. Brady Quinn's best game.
So, of course, we are talking about the Lions against the Browns in Ford Field, a 38-37 victory. Oh, what a beautiful, just a beautiful memory. Yeah.
This is it. This is the game. Set. The 20. Let's have it. Last play of the game. Takes the snap. Rolls. End zone. Touchdown. Detroit Lions out. It's out. That is it. I love you, man.
Bob and I were at that game.
We were. And thank God the NFL mic'd up that game because I've watched that a million times.
It's such a good mic'd up.
I can't tell you how many times I've watched that 6.5 minute clip, Stafford being mic'd up. It's great entertainment. It's so good.
I remember I wanted to skip Brady Quinn for a while. I wasn't always on the Stafford wagon, but at the end of the first quarter, everyone was like leaving. Like Bob and I were with someone else who like left at halftime, and we're like, "What the hell? It was looking so bad. We're gonna get blown out by this horrible team." And then Stafford just took over.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Connor, the Lions were down 24-3 with 3 minutes left in the first quarter in this game, and they end up winning at 38-37.
I distinctly remember people just lying out like same old Lions, and like we of course stayed because we're the biggest.
Yeah, we always stay.
That second half was so much fun. And that second quarter too, really after the first quarter, it was just a beautiful game to watch.
Oh yeah. I mean, these are some of the people that caught touchdown passes in that game for the Lions. Kevin Smith, Will Heller, Brandon Pettigrew. So an interesting roster. This game didn't have any meaning in terms of playoffs when it occurred, but I mean,
75 yards for Calvin that game too, I think.
Oh yeah. Calvin was being Calvin, but, he had 161 and a touchdown in this game. Kevin Smith had 104 yards receiving in this game.
It just showed that Stafford had true grit.
Yeah.
That's what it proved that game.
Oh, yeah.
When he was hurt and he realized they had one more play, he's just like, get the fuck off me. Like, get up. Get in there. Culpepper's all like, oh, okay.
Oh, Culpepper, I saw. Oh, he's the jack.
They're all trying to hug him. He's like, whoa, whoa, get away from me. Like, after the touchdown.
Yeah. That was amazing.
The arm.
Then Rayola like,
I love you, man.
Unbelievable. 1 yard pass that 1 yard pass to Brandon Pettigrew with pretty much one arm. I know you only throw the ball with one arm, but it's really hard to do when your other arm is
shattered. Yeah. So yeah, I know.
And then I love when the players are like trying to high five him after they score and he's like, get off me.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Play that like cemented Stafford for me as like I just love this guy. Like from then on, I was ride or die Stafford. Oh, yeah. Like I defend him to anyone, anywhere. I knew he was that was the
especially
play.
Especially because I thought he was literally dead for a second after that CJ Mosley, I think it was, just freaking pile drive him into the ground. Like, oh my god, that looks so painful.
He looked like roadkill.
The dude's like 6'6", like 330 pounds, and just drilled. Oh my god,
he looked like Chuck Hughes.
Ooh.
But you know what about that play, though?
The play who actually died on the field, but
Jeez. I didn't know who Chuck Hughes was. So.
I love.
Sorry about that.
He brought that pain on himself because kept running back and forth, like just trying to extend that play forever. Like he ran for like 10 seconds before he finally got drilled on release. Like that was just like you knew that I won so bad.
And when he threw it, he knew it was coming. He's like, But I mean, he stood in there and threw it, man. He didn't like bail out or you know, there's other quarterbacks in the league that would just fall in that situation or something. But he stuck in there.
He has it, his life flashed before his eyes.
But I mean, this is a big reason why we drink the blue Kool-Aid is because we have a guy like this that we saw in this game, and you know. Like this is the reason why I drink the blue Kool-Aid so much. I just have so much faith in this guy. Like I just thought, like this is our destiny to win with this guy one way or the other. We just got to figure it out because this game was coming. Just a sign. Like this is the guy.
Oh yeah,
coming soon
for sure. He's our guy.
And it's coming this year, hopefully. Hopefully we can be in the stands to watch it, but yeah. We'll see how that goes.
I think part of the problem with the Lions was, I mean, now I think they're building a good team, in my opinion, what they're doing right now. But I think part of the problem was Stafford was really good, and he kind of bailed them out of a lot of stuff, and they would just rely on Stafford to, like, throw them out of situations. Absolutely. Instead of building a complete team. So I think that kind of worked against them the way they were using him. I don't know. What do you guys think of that?
Well, look who the GMs were during these years and stuff. It was so horrible. I mean, the Matt Millen years and the just ridiculous. And, you know, I think now, and I know people are impatient. You know, we've had a couple bad seasons win-wise. But this group now, I think, is very capable and very competent. And I think it's starting to show. We just need a little patience. And Stafford will finally have the team around him that we've been waiting for. I think it's coming soon.
I think we all agree with that.
I wish we had a plan like this when he was like 26.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the prime for quarterbacks, but in their 30 and 35, that's the prime years. Prime.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm not.
He's in his prime right now.
I have a feeling his
prime. It's like a bottle. It's like a bottle of wine that's aged and it's finally ready to drink.
I have
a
feeling his prime is going to be like truly exceptional because I even from the beginning I had a theory about him because the way he threw the ball, like how many rocket shots would he just like break his receiver's fingers because he was just throwing it so hard and he never really had any touch. He would just zing these lines on a rope and if he missed by an inch, he missed by a mile. But I had a feeling as he got older and lost just like a little edge on that arm, which not much, he would start to learn how to put a little more touch on the ball, and we'd really just see him blossom into just like an unstoppable quarterback. And I think we started to see that last year before he went down with injury.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's move on to the final segment here. Yeah. And top three Stafford plays of all time.
It is a hard pick.
My number three was that Kansas City throw. That we mentioned earlier in this game. It's just an incredible throw. I don't think anybody else in the entire league can make. So that was my number three personally. I don't know what you guys had it. Your number three.
Well, that's my honorable mention.
I would go with that. Go ahead.
What?
UJ was just saying that was his honorable mention, Bob. That's all.
I was going to
bend the rules again, like
go
I
with that the Dallas game where he threw it in triple coverage to Calvin that throw, mm-hmm. but then made Sports Illustrated cover and everything.
That was awesome!
One of the amazing throws.
It was.
Yeah. How about you, Connor?
Yeah, that was my number three as well. I remember that cover still. Like, I think we had that in our house for a long time, and I would just, like, pick it up occasionally and look at it. But such a great play. Not much else to say about it.
Was that the Clockett game, the one you're talking about?
No, the other Dell game.
No,
this
was in Dallas.
Yeah, okay, in Dallas. Good, then. Which made it even better that it happened in Dallas.
Yeah.
So who's next?
Me.
Red Dog.
One of them that pops into my mind is a Dallas game, but the one with the Clockett game, the throw that set up the throw that got him to the 1 yard line on the left sideline where he just throws an absolute bullet. I think it was Calvin, but I'm not 100%. I can't. Do you know?
It was Calvin.
Yeah, he just throws that rope on the sideline, just like it was so fast and just it was such a sick throw. And then he hits him on the next play down to the one, set up the go-ahead.
Absolutely. How about
my
UJ?
Number three is in the same game as the pass right after the one Jack just Rudd Dog just said. Calvin was ran just like a post, and he was running like toward the flag, and then he cut inside. Stafford, from the right camera angle, you see he's already let go of the ball before Calvin makes his cut, and he's covered tightly, tight coverage. Calvin turns, and the ball is right in his midst. He gets down to the 1 yard line, which set up the Stafford sneak. But I think that was just an unbelievable pass with a lot of traffic around it. I thought it was a great pass, pinpoint.
Oh yeah,
that's my number three.
All right, so I'll go into my number two, and it's the throw to Andre Roberts against the Vikings a few years ago. The Lions at 17 seconds from their own 20-yard line. He just fires and absolutely guns a 35-yard pass, I believe, to Andre Roberts over the middle. Andre Roberts made a really nice catch. It was a little behind his right shoulder, but it was absolutely gun, and there was two guys on him. Only one spot to put the football. Then a run down and clock it, and Matt Prater makes a 58-yard field goal to send it in overtime, which we won with the Golden Tate, that flip in the end zone, if you recall. Yeah. All set up by Matt Stafford, and just an absolute gun. Yeah. So I think it's a play that doesn't get talked about enough, but only Matt Stafford makes that throw in that situation, I believe. Maybe Mahomes, because he has really good arm strength too, but man, Stafford, just a phenomenal play right there. And I don't think it gets talked about.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to mention that number two.
Amazing.
How about you, Bob? Let's go to you now, number two.
My number two, well, when I was looking at these throws, I'm thinking of, I guess, the Calvin arrows, like, hot in my mind, because I'm going to go with another triple coverage throw on a 3rd and 18 against the Bengals. 50-yard pass in the end zone, through triple coverage. Calvin reeled it in. You remember that one? What was that, 2013?
That was a good one.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier there a little bit.
Great throw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bengals one.
Phenomenal. So
that was Pete Calvin and Stafford. Just throw it up between four dudes. Let's Calvin get
it. And he had to dodge like three guys around him trying to tackle him, and then to get to that.
But they always talk about a quarterback putting it where only the receiver can get it. I think no one does that better than Stafford. I don't think anybody does that better than Stafford.
Right? Like, if you see the main play, it just looks like he lobs it. But if you look at Calvin's perspective, like, it's perfectly thrown to a place where he can get it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a freakish
throw. Yeah, I think after
that was my number two.
They always talk about how, like, they would talk about how they train with Calvin and everyone. They would play above the defense, right? He'd throw the ball up where only Calvin get it. I think the year after Calvin was gone, we saw a lot of passes sail high over, like, Golden Tate. So he's like 5 inches shorter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Matt Stafford made him throwing to Calvin like a fun game of 500 sometimes. It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
How about you, Rod Dog? What do you have at number two?
My number two is actually a Stafford to Riddick pass. Theo Riddick. It was against the Dolphins. I'm not sure what year it was. It was one of the coolest passes I've ever seen because Stafford rolls out to his left. Riddick runs this route that is like down the left sideline into the end zone. Stafford throws it behind the defender before Riddick even breaks, and he just like does this little sidearm flick as Riddick breaks around the defender and catches it like an 11-yard touchdown pass. It was one of the coolest passes I've ever seen.
I remember that play.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Just the timing coordination of it all. It's just so sick. And the accuracy.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. That's a phenomenal play. That's a good one right there.
That's one now. If Mahomes did it, everyone would lose their damn minds. But Stafford did it, and I was just like, oh, Stafford, you know, he throws that weird sidearm.
Mm-hmm. All right, UJ, how about your number two?
Number two, I believe against the Minnesota Vikings, is one of the patented Stafford comebacks. He threw a pass, I believe it was Chris Durham, I think is his name, used to play with Stafford in college, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the last minute of the game, you know, struggling. He what do they call it, the turkey pole or whatever, that Stafford threw a perfect pass down the sideline at Chris Durham between two defenders. It was just a picture-perfect pass. And that one sticks out in my mind of just how sweet it was in the moment, you know. I thought that was a great pass.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I try not – well, and my number one is the Cleveland Browns game.
Yeah.
Man, it's hard to –
yeah, same. I mean, how do you not make that number one?
I know we have the same number one play in the game, but did anybody else not have that as number one, the last play of the game?
I did not have that. I did not have that one.
I don't have that one either.
I didn't make it.
All right, let's start with you then, Bob. What did you have?
All right, well, this is it's kind of an encapsulate aspect of Stafford's career that's underrated, I think. It's not even a throw. It's against the the who was at the Titans,
the guy.
When he ran over that cornerback and lowered his shoulder and took him out.
Yeah,
it's a running play, but Eddie, I don't even remember if he got the first down on it, but he
was a big game. He lost his helmet and one where his helmet flew off and all that.
Yeah, because normally you want your quarterback to avoid contact, but he just lowered his shoulder in there and knocked the guy down. That was beautiful. And I think he's a better runner than people give him credit for. I think it's part of his game that's underrated.
Agreed.
So I don't know what the order is, but I put that as my number one. So
like it.
I like it.
I do like that. Yeah, that's a really good one. How about you, Jay?
Mine is from a game I don't remember who they played against. I know it's the Golden Tate. And it was a bomb. It was a Golden Tate just ran a fly pattern on the sideline. And Stafford threw this thing just over 60 yards in the air on an absolute rope. You know,
was it the Saints?
I don't remember who it was against. I honestly don't remember. But, you know, 60 yards, you know, think about it. Most quarterbacks, they loft one up, let the receiver run under it. No, not Stafford. He goes back there and he throws a rocket on a dime. Just hits Tate on a dime. And to me, this showed off the strength of his arm, his accuracy. And I watched that thing. I replayed that thing 100 times to watch it because I just couldn't believe what I just saw. And then, you know, the announcers didn't think much of it, you know, just another pass. But to me, it was one of the most amazing passes I've ever seen before. It was just a rope. 60 yards, effortless. It was amazing.
Well, when you watch it the 100 first time, UJ, tell us who the other team was.
Okay.
And then let our listeners know in the future.
I never figured it out. But, you know, my mind's
probably Google it and figure it out.
I remember a really good one he had against the Saints that he had a really nice throw against. That was a deep throw. That's why I wasn't sure if it was that one. But, I mean, we can go down the list. We can talk about as many Marvin Hall throws this year as honorable mentions. Any sidearm throw.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No,
we can put all pass. Stafford sidearm throws, all completions that were sidearm throws in the Stafford throw honorable mention list here
I didn't know it was plays. For some reason, I thought we were doing just best throws, but
either or, it's how you interpret the.
Always bend the rules a little.
The category.
Rules are made to be broken, man.
That's right.
Exactly. That's
right. Bob's the leader of breaking them.
All right, gentlemen. So I think that's going to wrap it up for us here on this episode. What's that?
I thought we were going to talk about our number one.
That you said your number one was the Browns one.
But I wanted to talk about it more.
Oh, okay.
How awesome it was.
It was the shortest pass ever.
I know, but it was awesome. It
took 2 seconds.
Yeah. It was like
snapping through it.
It wasn't over. Even
we also talked about it for 5 minutes in the previous
segment. Yeah, we did talk about
it. But the context, it was like,
just rewind the podcast and you can hear about it again.
I'd like to say, Stafford, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the pod.
Oh,
talk about
absolutely.
That.
Yeah.
And congratulations on your newest baby. You're a girl daddy. We love it. I'm a girl.
Yeah,
a girl
four-time girl daddy champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we know the child's name?
Tyler.
Okay. So, Instagram at Drinking the Blue Kool-Aid, Twitter at Drinking Lions. Please subscribe to this podcast. Please leave a review. Share with whomever you want to be drinking the Blue Kool-Aid with us as well along for this upcoming season that we hope to
start. You can't
start
wait
on
for football!
I can't wait for sports in general
anything
to come back. And I know. Baseball and NBA are supposed to start next week from this recording, and hockey the week after that. So we do have something to look forward to.
When is curling start?
I think, you know, something could change in the next week. Who knows? But we want football especially to be back.
Yeah.
It's the only one I really care about.
So, yeah. So let's just hope we get it back, gentlemen. But thank you, everybody, for listening. And last but not least, as always,
go! Field, a charging team that will not yield. And when the blue and silver wave, stand and cheer the brave. Rock, rock, rock. Go hard, win the game. With with honor, you will keep your fame. Down the field and gain a Lions victory.
Go! Go.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.